Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1805, with a release date of March 16th, 2012, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. More on ham radio's role in the wake of a recent tornado outbreak. FEMA asks the FCC to permit text-to-speech EAS transmissions, interference from ocean buoys discovered on 10 meters, and a de-expedition to Mali is canceled due to political unrest in that nation. Find out details on the Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1805, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
Amateur radio operators in Hardin and surrounding Kentucky counties provided critical communications during and after the severe weather outbreaks on February 29th, and again on Saturday, March the 3rd. Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lessig, K9BIK, is here with the details.
Members of the Hardin County, Kentucky Amateur Radio Emergency Service were activated initially by the National Weather Service. This is a resource to relay significant weather information directly to their office in Louisville. Hardin County areas provided weather spotting, logistics, disaster assessment, and shelter coordination assistance. Throughout the severe weather, they were busy maintaining communications with served agencies, with hams in adjacent counties, other Aries units, and to amateur radio station WX4NWS, which is located at the Louisville National Weather Service office. Knowing in advance the high probability for dangerous weather, several of the volunteer radio amateurs took personal time off from work in order to perform this public service. In the aftermath of these deadly storms, Hardin County amateur radio operators continued to serve with agencies in affected areas in southern Indiana and eastern Kentucky, providing communications, disaster assistance, and support for ongoing search, rescue, and recovery operations. Fred Jones, WA4SWF, is the Region 4 Assistant Section Emergency Coordinator for the Aries in eastern Kentucky. He emailed Newsline that as of March 11th, there were amateur radio emergency service nets still in operation on 8 repeaters in eastern Kentucky. Whether or not these nets have been secured is unknown as we go to air. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Essick, K9BIK, in Zion, Illinois.
According to Shelby Ennis, WAWN, who is the emergency coordinator of the Hardin County ARES, 20 operators were active during the emergency on February 29th, and 27 volunteered on March the 3rd. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, better known as FEMA, has asked the FCC to reconsider portions of its latest EAS report and order, specifically in the area dealing with message standards. In its filing, FEMA told the Commission that portions of its fifth report and order on the EAS limit and ability of local emergency management officials to obtain all of the benefits of common alerting protocol messaging standards for EAS, especially those that deal with text-to-speech conversion. The FCC had put off the text-to-speech conversion issue for a separate rulemaking proceeding, but FEMA claims that one possible consequence of not allowing such conversions is that the common alerting protocol messages supplied without audio content would cause a CAP-equipped EAS device to interrupt a station's normal programming and only convey an EAS header tone, or it might only transmit an alert signal and an end-of-message notification. FEMA says that for radio stations, this would mean that no information usable by the public would be conveyed. As such, FEMA is urging the FCC to reconsider and to allow speech-to-text technology to support EAS radio operations from now on. The House Energy and Commerce Committee voted 31-16 on Tuesday, March the 6th, to approve an FCC reform bill that puts shot clocks on FCC decisions, requires disclosure of items before votes, and limits on merger conditions. The cable, phone, and broadcast industries all supported the FCC reform efforts as outlined in H.R. 3309, while House Democrats said the measure will needlessly tie the FCC's hands and could lead to endless litigation. Democrats have vowed to defeat the measure. At the same time, the House also passed a second non-controversial FCC reform bill, H.R. 3310, that simply requires the FCC to conduct a biannual survey of the state of competition in the marketplace that will be published online and submitted to Congress. The long-awaited Internet Radio Linking Project, or IRLP, topic channels have now gone live. IRLP users are now able to log on to Reflector channels allocated for interests ranging from DXing to music, media, history, and upcoming 2012 elections, and many more. For those not aware, the Internet Radio Linking Project was the result of research and development by Dave Cameron, VE7 LTD, back in 1998, as a way of using the Internet to interconnect repeaters worldwide. With the advent of IRLP topic channels, the concept has developed into a global discussion real-time forum on almost any topic of interest to those signed on. For up-to-date information on the IRLP topic channels, please visit www.irlptopics.net. To locate an IRLP node near you, go to status.irlp.net on the World Wide Web. The source of some mysterious weak signals on 29.684 megahertz with an 81.9 baud and 130 hertz shift have been located. According to the February IARU Region 1 newsletter, the signals came from the Spanish coastal area, were audible across all of Europe, but only during band openings and only by directional antennas. It turns out that the source of these transmissions by data well buoys. These buoys, produced in the Netherlands, are used for measuring water temperature and wave heights. They're designed to transmit with 75 milliwatts on frequencies between 27 and 40 megahertz. Dick Van Empelen, who is PA2GRU of Heemstede in the Netherlands, has since visited the Datawell company and has informed them that the buoy transmissions on the amateur service 10-meter band are illegal. The operations chief promised to inform all Datawell offices about this situation. Some breaking news in the world of DX. This with word that political unrest has led to a planned DX operation to Mali being put on indefinite hold. 2 weeks ago, members of the Italian de-expedition team announced that they were planning to be active as TZ-5T from Mali between April the 12th to the 27th. However, their pilot station, Art Lorenzo, IK7JWY, has now issued a statement that the situation of civil war in Mali between the government and the Tuareg insurgents is worsening. Because of this and other concerns, Mali authorities will not issue licenses to radio amateurs who may be targeted because of radio equipment. For this reason, the de-expedition has been postponed until a yet-to-be-determined later date. For updates, please check in regularly at www.i2ysb.com on the World Wide Web. And we'll have more DX news later on in this week's report. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline. Heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the Echo repeater systems serving Mount Prospect, Illinois. Space Weather reports that the sun has again erupted in a way that will likely affect radio propagation here on Earth for several days, especially on the high-frequency bands. We have more in this report.
Sunspot AR1429 unleashed another strong flare on March 13th. The Category M7.9 explosion produced a significant coronal mass ejection, or CME, that solar forecasters predicted would reach Earth at about 0620 UTC, plus or minus 7 hours, on March 15th, and whose effects on propagation could last several days. As a result, geomagnetic storms are possible when the charged cloud arrives that could produce auroral displays in the northernmost latitudes. This, in turn, could lead to aurora propagation at 50 megahertz and above. Ironically, a bright comet is at the same time diving into the sun. The comet was recently discovered by NASA's Solar and Heliospheric Observatory SWAN instrument. As such, they've named it Comet SWAN. The comet's death plunge, or swan dive as astronomers are calling it, comes just as the sun has unleashed this solar flare. Because of this, some of the SOHO images of the comet are confused to some degree by energetic protons striking the camera's imaging sensor. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. I'm in the newsroom in Los Angeles. Jim?
For updates on this and other solar activity, we suggest that you check spaceweather.com for the latest information. The FCC has affirmed a $25,000 notice of apparent liability issued to Gabriel A. Garcia of San Jose, California. This for a 2010 series of unlicensed radio transmissions heard on 92.9 megahertz, 93.7, and 104.3 megahertz, all traced to Garcia's residences. Garcia was issued four notices of unlicensed operation from the FCC before being issued a proposed fine in 2011. The base penalty in such cases is $10,000, but the agency has said that Garcia operated on multiple frequencies on multiple occasions and called his behavior particularly egregious. This because his transmissions allegedly interfered with the aviation radio services band. Garcia never responded to the proposed fine. Having not heard an appeal from him since issuing the NAL last March, the FCC now has finalized the $25,000 fine and given him the customary 30 days to pay. If he fails to do so, the case may be referred to the Department of Justice for collection. Broadcast engineers have formed a committee to coordinate spectrum use at the Democratic and Republican conventions this summer. According to member Ray Benedict, Polycom 2012 was formed in an effort to head off radio and TV personnel who may show up at the convention and then try to use their wireless mics and two-way radios without first going through the frequency coordination process. The Republican convention is August 27th through the 30th in Tampa, Florida, and the Democratic convention is September the 3rd through the 6th in Charlotte, North Carolina. The committee says it'll seek a temporary rules waiver to allow TV channels 14, 16, and 17 to be used as communications channels in Tampa and TV channels 14, 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20 in Charlotte. Broadcast engineering consultant Louis Lieben is the Polycom 2012 chairman. Lieben has chaired frequency coordination committees for past seven national political conventions. A fascinating new piece of merchandise has come along that, while not meant for ham radio, deserves a mention. Henry Engineering, the California-based company owned by Hank Landsberg, WB6MEU, has come out with a broadcast product that could be also of interest to contesters, DXers, as well as dedicated multi-operator stations, such as during field day. Called the Talent Pod, the unit is a desktop local host controller for microphones and headphones that the company says solves audio problems often encountered when doing remote broadcasts. Talent Pod is a mini console made for use by an announcer. It also gives that person full control of his or her mic and headphones. It lets the announcer turn on the mic and create a mix of local and return audio in the headphones. The mic button is illuminated and is visible in outdoor settings. A cough button momentarily mutes the mic audio. There are also two separate inputs for local and return audio with a volume control for each. The operator can control the volume level and the mix of the headphone audio. To prevent confusion between the local and the return audio, Talent Pod also has two pan switches so that the announcer can independently position the local and return audio in the center, left, or right channel of the headphones. As most hams involved in contesting and multi-op DXing will note, all of these functions could easily be adapted to use in an amateur radio multi-operator station environment. All it takes is a bit of imagination. More information on the Talent Pod is online at www.henryeng.com. The nomination period is now open for a number of ARRL awards that are designed to recognize educational and technological pursuits in amateur radio, as well as an award to honor a young amateur radio operator. These include the Herb S. Breyer Instructor of the Year Award for Educators and the Hiram Percy Maxim Award for a licensed radio amateur under the age of 21, to name only two. In all, there are half a dozen awards this year. For more information, take your web browser to tinyurl.com/ARRL-awards-2012. Or you can contact Steve Ewald by email to wv1x@ARRL.org. The International Museums Weekend Special Events Coordinations will take place on the weekends of June the 16th through the 17th and again on June the 23rd and 24th. Radio amateurs are encouraged to participate in this event by setting up stations in their local museums. The International Museums Weekend organizer, Harry Bloomfield, M1BYT, in Leeds in the UK, asks that all those attending take part in the event to register their museum operations at www.ukradioamateur.co.uk/IMW. This is not only a fun event, but also one that permits you to showcase amateur radio to non-hams worldwide. The New York's QSY Society Amateur Radio Club will be hosting a special event station at the Samuel F.B. Morse Estate at Locust Grove in the city of Poughkeepsie. This in celebration of his creation of the Morse code in 1832. The operation will run from 8:30 a.m. till 1:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Saturday, April 14th, using the special event call sign K2QS. Transmissions will be centered on 7.034 on 40 meters and 14.034 megahertz on 20. Hams making contact with K2QS will be eligible for a special commemorative QSL card. QSL requests go to David Ruth at 48 Hoof Print Road, Millbrook, New York, 12545. Some names in the news. The Radio Society of Great Britain has announced that Steve Fletcher, G4RFC, has been appointed as the UK National Society's Olympic facilitator. According to a press release, Fletcher will be drawing together all of the information on amateur radio special events associated with the upcoming Olympic and Paralympic Games in the UK. As such, he wants to hear about any individual plans so the RSGB website can show who is doing what, when, and where. Fletcher can be reached by email to g4rfcinfo@yahoo.com.uk. Howard Long, G6LVB, will be the featured speaker at the 2012 AMSAT Tapper Hamvention Banquet on Friday night, May 18th in Dayton, Ohio. Long will be talking about his FunCube dongle and the 64 to 1700 megahertz software-defined receiver. Banquet tickets will not be sold at the AMSAT booth during the Hamvention, therefore reservations must be made in time through the AMSAT store. It's located in cyberspace at tinyurl.com/AMSAT-NA-store. Tickets are priced at $30 apiece. And a talk about improving audio on the ham radio bands given by Bob Heil, K9EID, has been posted online by M3XYP. Recorded at the United Kingdom 2011 National Ham Fest, the video is in five parts and can be found at www.youtube.com/user/M3XYPSAR/videos. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Another of those sad changing of the guard moments, this with the word that the ham radio community has lost legendary Pacific de-exeter and de-expeditioner Ron Wright, ZL1 AMO. Word went out 2 weeks ago that Wright had been admitted to the North Shore Hospital in New Zealand because of a collapsed lung but recovered. The last medical update noted that ZL1 AMO was in stable condition. According to reports, Wright was still in the hospital at the time of his death on March the 6th. Funeral services for ZL1 AMO were to be held at the Morrison Funeral Home in Henderson, New Zealand on Saturday, March 10th. At the time of his passing, Ron Wright, ZL1 AMO, was the age of 75. A call has gone out for speakers for the AMSAT UK 2012 International Space Colloquium. This year's gathering will take place on the weekend of September the 15th and the 16th at the Holiday Inn in Guildford, England. Also being sought are papers for subsequent publishing on the AMSAT UK website. Submissions should be sent via email to david.johnson@blackpepper.co.uk or to the postal address for G4DPZ found on qrz.com. Hans van den Gronendal, ZS6AKV, reports that the amateur satellite frequency coordination request form has been updated and is available for download from www.iaru.org/satellite. Also on the IARU satellite webpage are a number of guideline documents which will assist satellite builders, including a document on the ITU requirements for amateur radio satellites. ZS6AKV is the IARU satellite advisor. AMSAT's Roy Hode, WA5QGD, has announced that the organization's request to redistribute U.S. Air Force Space Command Keplerian elements from Spacetrack has been approved for the period from April 1, 2012 to April 1, 2013. AMSAT's request to distribute the orbital element data was approved on March the 1st. The Radio Netherlands Media Network weblog will be closing for good at the end of the winter shortwave broadcast season on Saturday, March 24th. This is the result of a new mandate by the Holland-based broadcaster that effective January 1, 2013, it will no longer be possible to provide coverage of international media news. The weblog is written and edited by Andy Sennett and contains over 15,000 media news items published since October of 2003. Sennett says it'll remain online as long as a searchable archive. To prevent spam, it will no longer be possible to add comments, but the nearly 14,000 comments already received will still be available for viewing. The last Media Network newsletter will be emailed to subscribers on March the 22nd. The administrative board of the Greek public broadcaster has ordered the switch-off of 11 medium-wave transmitters. This is a result of a new austerity measure due to financial situations being faced by that European nation. This leaves only 9 medium-wave transmitters with their respective Greek public radio programs in operation. The action was adopted by the administrative board after a meeting on February the 17th. From the Radio Sports File, word is that CQIR contest is taking place at not long after this newscast goes to air, that being from midday on Saturday, March 17th, to midday on the 18th. This year's contest will be the international showpiece event for the Irish Radio Transmitter Society's 80th anniversary celebration. Paul O'Kane, EI5DI, advises that his contest logger will be free and unrestricted for the contest. Also, that his SD may be downloaded from EI5DI.com. CQIR entrants should be aware that the Russian DX contest overlaps with it. Now, you can easily tell the difference between the two in that the Russian stations will send a two-character district code instead of a serial report as used in the CQIR competition. Full rules for the CQIR contest are available online at www.irts.ie. In DX, 2E1 EUB will once again be active from the eastern Scotland as 2M1 EUB for 7 days beginning March 24th. He'll be located in the Cairngorms National Park, operating on 160 and 80 meters and several ham satellites. QSL as directed under 2M1 EUB on QRZ.com. The current XW1A and XW0ZJZ operation from Laos have been approved for DXCC credit. Bill Moore, NC1L, who heads up the DXCC desk at the ARRL headquarters, made the approval official on Tuesday, March the 13th. EI7CC will be on the air from Lesotho as 7P8PB through April the 3rd. Activity will be holiday style. He'll operate when circumstances permit. QSL via EI7CC, either direct or via the Bureau. Logs will be uploaded to Logbook of the World immediately after his return to Ireland. A large group from Germany and Poland plan to be active from the Pacific island of Tonga until March the 24th. They're using the call sign of A35YZ. You can QSL via DL7DF. Down the road a little bit comes word that DK9FM will once again be returning to Tumotu province to be active as H40FN between this December 22nd to January the 7th of 2013. QSL H4OFN via HA8DD. More details will be forthcoming. Lastly comes news that F4CYZ will be operational from Morocco as CN2YZ through the year's end. His activity will be from the city of Tangier and especially on the weekends. The Mediterraneo DX Club is supporting these activities and is also providing a website with a log check-in. It's in cyberspace at www.mdxc.org/CN2YZ. And finally, this week, a dispute between NASA and some former astronauts over ownership of space artifacts has led to a bill in Congress that would give the Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo astronauts full ownership rights. This to items such as checklists and personal logs from their missions. We have more in this report.
Known as H.R. 4158, the proposed legislation grows out of an effort last year by Apollo 13 Commander Jim Lovell to sell the Lunar Module Activation Checklist that had been used to convert the Moonlander into a space lifeboat on the periled 1970 Apollo 13 mission. The sale brought a record-setting $388,375, but was put on hold after the National Aeronautics and Space Administration demanded proof that the former astronaut owned the item. Now comes H.R. 4158 that was introduced by Representative Ralph Hall of Texas. Hall is the chairman of the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee. The measure's co-sponsor was Representative Eddie Bernice Johnson, also of Texas. It has since amassed an additional 15 co-sponsors. In a letter to their congressional colleagues, the two key sponsors wrote that the legislation would allow the first generation of astronauts to retain spaceflight artifacts that have been in their possession, in many cases, for more than 40 years. Under the proposed measure, astronauts from the Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo programs would be allowed to keep items such as personal logs and checklists. The only things off-limits would be rock samples gathered on those early lunar missions, the so-called moon rocks. After meeting with Lovell and several other former astronauts last month, NASA Administrator Charles Bolden said that these are American heroes. He called them fellow astronauts and personal friends who have acted in good faith. As such, Bolden says that they are committed to working together to find the right policy and legal paths forward to addressing outstanding ownership questions. H.R. 4158 has bipartisan support and is expected to make it all the way through the congressional rulemaking process. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, Don Wilbanks, AE5DW in New Orleans.
This was not the first time that NASA has challenged the sale by an astronaut of a piece of space memorabilia. In 2010, NASA challenged Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell's attempt to sell a camera that he took to the moon. Mitchell eventually agreed to donate the camera to the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. A reminder that the nominating period for the 2012 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is now open. Full details and a downloadable nominating form are on our website at www.arnewsline.org/YHOTY. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, on Florida's Sunshine Coast, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2012. All rights are reserved.